This is the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. Chris and I were joined by Robert Wilson from SWF to chat about marketing Scottish women's football, posing challenges and opportunities for the season ahead. As always, thanks for listening. If you're a new listener, you can find out our other 50 or so episodes on the Scottish FA website or on your podcast platform of choice. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. I'm Chris Sampson from Sports Marketing Scotland, and I'm with the Scottish FA's digital manager, Michael Boko. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Chris.
How are you tonight?
Good. You?
Yeah, not too bad at all. A rare late night recording for us. It feels like old times, apart from neither of us are back at Hampden yet.
Yeah, I think we're a wee bit away from that yet as well.
Yeah, I know. We are joined by a guest tonight. We've got Robert Wilson from Scottish Women's Football on with us, and he is their marketing and communications officer. We've wanted to focus on women's football on the podcast ever since we started it, haven't we, Michael?
Yeah, we'll probably be the first about this, probably a bit overdue, this podcast. We've seen fantastic achievements of Scotland women's national team, the impact that's had on inspiring a new generation of female footballers. Obviously, there's the whole league setup as well that goes on in Scotland, and it's something that we've not touched on enough on the podcast. So hopefully we will have a good 45 minutes, hour ahead of us to find out a bit more. Obviously, COVID, like everything else, has undoubtedly had an impact on the sort of momentum that was gathering around the women's game, especially around some of the great achievements of the SWNT. So it'll be good to hear what could be done to pick up where things were left, for example. We'll also find out what some of the plans are. Obviously, like any sort of sport and within football, there's obviously challenges as well. So maybe just digging a wee bit deeper on them as well.
Definitely, yeah. Robert, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you guys for having me. It's good to be here.
No, not a problem at all. We're looking forward to the next 45 to an hour, as Michael said. Let's just get into it then. Can you tell us a bit about your background and also your current role at Scottish Women's Football?
Yeah, so as you touched upon, my current role is the Marketing Communications Officer for Scottish Women's Football. My background, I actually studied politics at the University of Glasgow, which I'm never going to go into politics, I can assure you that now, though people have asked, definitely not. But the one thing that I always did when I was at university, I was always volunteering. So at the time, it was Youth Football Scotland doing kind of radio commentaries, podcasts, etc. So from there, I've always had an interest in broadcast journalism, football, sport, everything like that. So even though I was doing politics, I was always told to do volunteering on the side, build up that kind of experience and that repertoire if you want. So from university, I worked, actually got offered a full-time role at Youth Football Scotland, then moved on to become the media and content, social media and marketing manager at Castle Leisure Group, which was more a bit of a sidestep. That was more kind of entertainment in terms of hospitality venues and things like that. But it was a really good experience for me to do something a bit different, not just football, not just sport. Gave me a really good kind of bit of experience and something different. And then actually at the same time as working at Castle Leisure Group, I was freelancing for Scottish Women's Football, just doing kind of one day a week almost in the background just to try and help and support. So when the opportunity of a full-time role became available, I applied and was lucky enough to actually get the job. So now here I am, obviously in that role, and to kind of summarise it in short, I see it as trying to, I guess, portray the game in the most professional manner possible, and try and keep everybody as well informed in the game as well, just, you know, externally, but also internally. But there's also a little bit of other things that I'll, you know, get involved in. The annual awards is one big thing that I'll help organise as well. So, I try and help out as much as possible, but marketing communications is the day-to-day for me.
Cool. And then obviously from that marketing and communications perspective, what's the rest of the setup like behind the scenes?
Yeah, so SWF at the moment has 5 full-time members of staff, and we as a team are responsible for the day-to-day running of around about 80 competitions. So that ranges from the very top level of our game, so the SWPL and the Scottish Women's Cup, all the way to your regional under-13s leagues, where, you know, it's the games just starting for some of the players involved in the game. So about three of my colleagues are predominantly responsible for the footballing aspects of the game. So you kind of, you're talking about your fixtures, your results. And then myself and my colleague, Michelle, we are responsible for more specific roles. So obviously myself in marketing, and Michelle, she works in child wellbeing and protection. So in terms of specifically marketing communications, I'm the only full-time member of staff, which again, you know, there's pros and cons to that. But we do also have a small number of volunteers and kind of media team members who will help on maybe match days more specifically. And we do have a freelance graphic and website designer called Scott Sutherland, who I have to give a shout out at WeShape, because the work he does to support SWF and everything that goes on is fantastic. So it's not just me on my Todd entirely, but obviously in terms of being the only full-time member of staff, that does have its pros and cons, are the same.
What then, Robert, would you say the sort of vision and is for SWF? Obviously there's part of it is to minister the game, but is there any other sort of overarching objectives or messages that the organisation tries to portray?
Yes, so in terms of, I think, SWF's overarching objectives at the moment, that kind of comes from our board, who are all voluntary and do a fantastic amount of work for the game. I think kind of what's been set out at the moment is for SWF to get more people playing and to get more people watching. So, you know, again, kind of does what it says on the tin, so I won't, you know, go into too much detail on it. But I think what's important to highlight with more people playing is not just the kind of the youth side of the game. You know, obviously that is very much important. You know, that's the next generation, and you know, that is, as I say, very important. But also alongside the Scottish FA, who do a lot of great work in that area of getting, you know, young girls starting from a very young age and then going into competitive football, which SWF run. But it's also about adults as well, who are looking to get into football, to make friends, to keep fit, to have fun, not necessarily to become, you know, the next big superstar of Scotland, but to play on a regular basis and as I say, to have an enjoyable experience within Scottish women's football. And then more people watching, again, it does what it says on the tin, but I think, again, the two aspects of that are not just people at games, which is obviously, you know, a very important aspect to SWF and for the women's game in general, but also more people watching online, engaging in different ways and social media, you know, news sites, etc. So more people having an interest in the game. So those are the two main objectives. There's plenty more under that. But I think for me and in my role, the two things that I'm certainly trying to always look at is, does what I'm doing, does it help us get more people playing or more people watching? And if it doesn't, how much time and focus do you really want to put into it? Because those are the key things we want to achieve.
What sort of thing have you been doing to, I'd say probably pre-COVID, obviously, but to get more people watching? Because I assume it's can be quite a challenge at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of to get more people watching, it is certainly a challenge. But I think, you know, one of the things that has been really good for Scottish women's football and the game in general is we've built up some really good partnerships. You know, BBC Alba has been an absolute massive one for us. You know, getting a broadcast partner is obviously a huge tick in the box on getting more people watching. As I say, it's not just that, it is also people at games, but, you know, I don't think they are, you know, just that they come together almost. They're not just exclusive. So I think if you get more people watching, both on TV, that hopefully does translate into more people in the stands. And it does actually correlate, because what we see is, for example, for Farmington against Hibs was the first BBC Alba game in the league that was broadcast live, but it was also the highest attendance for Farmington ever had for a live match. So you had the eyes on the TV, but you also had the extra spectators there at the game. So I think that's been absolutely brilliant for SWF, because they're invested as a partner as well. So I think that's been huge. One of the big things I was working on was obviously the agreement with BBC Sport Scotland. That was unfortunately kind of brought to a halt by the coronavirus pandemic, but we've managed to pick that back up, and my colleagues have while I've been on furlough. And that's also massive, because BBC Alba, they are now covering 12 games in SWPL due to an enhanced agreement, but BBC Sport Scotland will cover live one game every weekend. And I think that's massive, because, as I say, what we've seen is that it does seem to lead to an increase in attendances. And because we've got that regular level of people watching online, I do think that will translate into more people attending games, because hopefully what will happen is we'll get these great stories, these great kind of personalities that will come from the game, which are being shown more regularly. People will be more interested, will want to go along and see it for themselves in the flesh. So I think those have been some of the really key things that I've been working on, alongside the clubs, who are obviously doing some fantastic work to actually get people along to the games, because it's all well and good doing the things that we've just spoken about or talked about. It's also very important that when we do get those people along to the games, they have a good experience as well. And that, to an extent, does come down to the clubs and what they offer, which at the moment is very strong in our game.
Robert, just in terms of that audience there that you are trying to attract, obviously to attend more matches, but also kind of online as well, what are the kind of core audiences that it is that you are targeting? Because I think from my experience of the women's games that I've been to, it's such a broad audience, but it sometimes does it help you to target that in a little bit more, to hone it in, or is it a broad audience that it is you're targeting?
I think it is a broad audience, but at the same time, I certainly like to, in my mind, when the plans that we come up with, and when we are, you know, coming up with ideas and what we're going to put online and you know, out there as our brand, I think we'd like to have kind of someone in mind. And it's, you know, I think the core one I always try and pick up upon is families. I think, again, that's quite broad in itself. You know, you could be much more specific with that. But I guess what we're trying to do is we're trying to target particularly the parents in those families that will make the decision at the end of the day to take their son, daughter, you know, the family as a whole along to a match day experience. So I think that's the kind of key person I often have in my mind, particularly if we're trying to encourage people to come along to games. So one of the big ideas that we're working on at the moment is basically going out to nationally to all primary schools in Scotland and saying free entry for all primary school children. So for example, that's an incentive that we hope that young people will go home and they'll say, look, I get to go free to any SWPL game, can we go along? But at the end of the day, it is also the parent that has to make that final decision about taking them along, going along to a match. So I think what we can do to support that is also with our branding and with our messaging to make it family friendly and try and make people aware that the women's game is different to the men's game in a lot of ways, in the sense that it's probably not going to be so much shouting and bawling from hundreds of people around you every minute, which again has its pros and cons. So I think that's one that we have in mind. But you did touch upon it in terms of people watching. I'm certainly now hoping more and more we will attract people that perhaps didn't have any interest in the women's game coming into this season. You know, they support a men's team in Scotland. Hopefully now, because it's more accessible via BBC Alba and via BBC Sport Scotland, they will go, do you know what, I'm going to watch the game. And hopefully they go, actually, you know, maybe they weren't expecting much from it because, you know, there is that stigma around women's football. But hopefully they watch it, see the standard, understand it a bit more, and actually then will watch more, whether it be just online throughout the season or whether they'll take that leap to come along to games as well. So it is quite broad, as I say, but I think those are two very much that this season we want to target in on and in different ways.
How do you then track and kind of measure the performance of the things that you're putting out there on social or across the websites, but in terms of attendance at matches as well, how do you determine what you are doing and what some of the clubs are doing as a success?
That's probably the hardest part that we have, and you know, again, it's the area that we need to do more work on as an organisation. What we're kind of going on at the moment is more kind of your gut feeling to some extent, but also based on what we see at matches. And you know, you kind of touched upon it you know, earlier on, in the sense that when you go to matches, you do see a broad spectrum. But what we saw, for example, for the matches that we run specifically, such as the Scottish Women's Cup final from last year, where we had just over 3,000 at Tynecastle, we were able to see more information and you know, demographics from that, because we were running the game. And what we did see was that the majority of tickets that were actually redeemed at the gate or in advance were for under 16s, for example. And then what we saw alongside that was that the majority of people were either parents or it was actually coaches coming from the clubs that were bringing along, you know, large groups of kids from the team or from the club itself. So, you know, we were able to drive home more into that. We could obviously also, you know, delve into Google Analytics in terms of where the ticket sales were coming from, the typical age demographics and the advertising campaigns we did. But as you kind of touched upon, because we are the league association or the organisation, because we're not running and responsible for ticketing on match day for every league game, for example, it's, you know, it's the home team that does that, we're not necessarily getting the information that we would like to get. And that simply comes from the fact that at the moment, the clubs may not have the resources, both financially, but in terms of personnel, to actually give us that information. So we do try and say to them, look, can you nail down a bit more in terms of the you know, your attendance? You know, can you give us some rough ideas? But that is hard. But I think, as I say, because we're going to enough games, especially myself going to games, you know, we do get a good feel of the demographics that we're attracting. But it's something that we need to do more of and actually nail that down more to find out if we are being successful with what we're trying to achieve. But on the whole, so far, I think we, you know, that Tynecastle example for the Scottish Women's Cup final, I think we knew that was successful because we had the information to be able to get the statistics and the information we needed.
You've mentioned a couple of things there in your last couple of answers about possible opportunities, whether it's attracting more fans over from traditionally from the men's game, or that information and data and whether it's centralising that or just getting more of that from clubs into the SWF. Would you say that there are some of your bigger opportunities, or is there other things out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think that's a really big opportunity for us because, you know, obviously if you can understand, you know, where all the you know, our fans and where people are coming from and how it is we're attracting them to games, then that will allow us to really pinpoint and try and successfully go on and find similar target audiences and attract them in the right way. I think that is a really big opportunity for us. But I think as well, you know, we kind of touched upon it, I think the family-friendly nature of the game is a massive opportunity that we need to really push on and actually, again, capitalise on to an extent. Because, you know, right now we've got a really great atmosphere at games, you know, in terms of, as we're saying, you're not going to have, you know, hundreds of fans hurling abuse every single minute. You're not going to be segregated. You know, you're not going to have to worry about that kind of thing. There will still be kind of rivalries and passions on the pitch. There's no doubt about that. But it doesn't spill over. It doesn't. It's respectful in a way. And some people may love or hate that. You know, I know everybody likes to bring up rugby in these kind of scenarios. But you know, it does well in terms of its family friendly nature. And I think that's something that, you know, women's football in Scotland, that's something that we should really try and push on and promote. One of the things I always worry is that as the game becomes more popular, that may change, and there is the potential for that. But I think that's also why it's important that we do more to promote that now, because I think the more families, the more young people that are going to games, I think as maybe more traditional fans of the men's game, as they start to come along to women's football, hopefully they will adapt their behaviour rather than just bring over that behaviour with them, because hopefully if they're not surrounded necessarily by maybe like-minded fans, it's more as they families and young people, maybe they will adapt their behaviour. So I think that could potentially be a worry, but that's perhaps a way to almost not get around it, is actually by encouraging more families and more young people now, rather than being worried about that as a potential negative in the future.
We touched on a couple of them a bit earlier on, but what would you say is some of your biggest hurdles or challenges in terms of growing the women's game in Scotland?
Yeah, I mean, you did touch upon it in terms of the coronavirus pandemic. I think, you know, that was huge. And I don't want to go too much into it because obviously, like, everybody knows the kind of negative impacts that it's had. But I think, you know, in terms of momentum, which you touched upon, that was a massive loss for us. We'd just gone through a significant restructuring of the senior arm of the game and developing a regional and a performance pathway. You know, we had these playoff matches, the new SWPL Cup group stage, for example. We'd, you know, all this work that had gone into it and basically just started and then had to kind of nosedive back down. And then specifically in the SWPL, I say we kind of had the BBC Alba and Hans deal at the time. We had BBC Sport Scotland there. And I think there was a real buzz going into that season about the title race in both SWPL1 and SWPL2. You know, everybody, I think, knew about the challenge that Rangers and Celtic could potentially pose to both Hibs and Glasgow City. And in a league of eight teams, when you've got four, potentially even more, that are challenging for the title, that's going to be exciting. So I think that was a a big blow and a big challenge, because now we have to build that momentum back up. But I think what's been really great to see is that I've been on furlough for a large part of it, but from the outside looking in, you know, we had that funding from James Anderson and the anonymous donor, which I think was massive in terms of financial, benefit to everybody involved in the game. But we've also seen Scottish Building Society continue on. BBC Alba have enhanced their deal even further than before. So I think the fact is that the work that's been going on in the background, which is down to my colleagues who've worked through the pandemic, the momentum is hopefully still there, but it is going to be a challenge to get it back perhaps to where it once was. And I think the other thing that is potentially, well, still is a challenge, it always has been to a certain extent with women's football, is that stigma around the game. A lot of people, people in my family included in that, who I always try and convince, they're not really willing to give it a chance. And I don't understand it personally, because I think women's football is brilliant. And I don't necessarily think it's always apples and apples in comparison. But I think the fact is that I always try and explain to them that, the women's game was effectively banned in this country and in other countries around the world for decades. And if we were to ban the men's game for decades, and just as well kind of belittle it to some extent, where would the game be at this point in time? So I think the fact that the women that are involved in the game right now have got to this point and have got such a high level and such a high standard, despite even sometimes not being paid as professionals, it's unbelievable, really. And I think, given if it wasn't for that ban and for that time where the game was belittled in the manner that it was, I think it would be even better than it is right now. So I think it's about trying to explain to people the history behind the game, that to explain that it is different from men's football, that has its pros and its cons, but the fact that we are where we are is just unbelievable. It's times have changed, but the game is developing at such a fast rate. It's something that hopefully people can support and really appreciate the work that's gone on by girls and women previously, but also now, to get us to this point. So I think that is a big challenge, but trying to explain it to people is what we have to try and do as an organisation and everybody involved in the game, I think.
Yeah, I think that you touched on it there in terms of shifting sort of predetermined opinions. As part of that, and we see that as well, obviously from the Scottish FA's point of view. But I wanted to touch on something you mentioned there. It was quite a valid point about the Scottish Building Society and obviously their continued support. How do you work alongside them and the league to boost sort of women's football and delivering value to them as well at the same time?
Yeah, I think the Scottish Building Society sponsorship has been great for the game overall. The value in itself of having a league sponsor isn't necessarily just the financial, which is obviously a massive part of it, but it's the sign of trust and support in that SWPL brand. We didn't have a sponsor until they came along, and I think the work that the board had done to rebrand SWF, the SWPL, restructure the game at that point was absolutely massive. So to get that kind of seal of approval, if you want, from a brand that's as recognisable as Scottish Building Society was massive for us, for SWF and for the SWPL. I think in terms of trying to deliver value for them, I think there's always more we could do. I'm always trying to think of ways we can do more to help them and to support them. But I think what we've tried to do is really make it Scottish Building Society synonymous with SWPL. We've really, really tried to do that, because everybody knows of certain brands that are linked to certain sports or certain sports leagues, and that's what we've tried to do with Scottish Building Society. We want it to be synonymous. So again, one of the other things that we've done as well is, not just from an SWPL perspective, but they've also been very willing to actually go and do more in the grassroots game as well. So go out and support girls' teams, women's teams in the local areas. And we've obviously tried to help and facilitate that as well. And I think one thing that I would say is, and again, we're always trying to do more, is there's difficulties that perhaps we didn't necessarily appreciate right back at the start. I wasn't necessarily involved way back when it all came together. But I think it's funny when you see people who obviously suggest things here and there and maybe don't appreciate the certain factors that are involved in women's football. So You know, for example, when the first BBC Alba Live game was between Forfar and Hibs, somebody on Twitter was like, you know, this is a great opportunity to brand Scottish Building Society everywhere. Why haven't they done that? And, you know, I didn't reply at the time, and maybe I should have, but obviously, one, there is the financial cost of that, but two, it's the actual ground ownership as well. It's a thing that people don't necessarily consider, but Forfar Farmington don't own Station Park. So, you know, the logistics of actually removing, you know, brands or advertising boards and erecting your own, you know, there's a lot of hoops and loops that you have to jump through to do that. And those kind of things apply to a lot of the clubs in Scottish women's football because they don't necessarily own their grounds similar to what they do in men's football. So actually, going around and putting in significant amounts of branding is quite difficult, which is why you may see our kind of mobile Toblerone boards now and again on TV at both men's and women's matches, because they're quite hard to move, but they are good in terms of you can move them if you need to, from stadium to stadium, ground to ground. And but they have to be portable because we can't just simply go and erect advertising everywhere we want. So I think that we're always trying to get value for Scottish Building Society, but it's things like that that maybe people don't appreciate. They think it's really easy, it's really simple, but actually there's a lot of factors that maybe impact our game that don't necessarily impact on the men's game so much. So it makes it difficult in ways, but we always try and work around them to get the value that you were speaking about.
Robert, you touched on it a fair bit already, but just kind of circling back to it a little bit more and building that momentum back up again ahead of the new SWPL season. Obviously, it's very close to beginning now. What has been in the planning for it?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of you know, the planning for it, I have been on furlough, so a lot of it has been kind of more your theoretical rather than your practical. So there is a lot more that I think, you know, I'll have to sit down and speak to my colleagues now that I'm back and properly go through it all. But, you know, I think from my perspective, I think as we were kind of touching upon, one of the key things is really trying to get more people watching and more people, you know, both online and actually going to games. So the campaign that we kind of touched upon with regards to primary schools, that's something that I would love to do. And I think we really should do. It's from my perspective, it's a bit of a no-brainer, because what my idea would be is simply to say to every school, every primary school in Scotland, you know, every pupil in the school gets free entry to any SWPL match. But what we would do as a league and as an association is we would obviously encourage the support for the local team. So, for example, the teams in Perth, we would try and give them information about St Johnston. So we could give, you know, posters, flyers, information about why they should support St Johnston women's football team. Here's their fixtures. Here's where you find about them. It might even be that we come up with like a little mini season ticket, and it is branded more towards St Johnston, for example. It's a no-brainer, because most of the clubs in our game already actually offer free entry for the kind of under 12s anyway. But if they don't, it's probably something that they should, because there's no real financial loss in the sense that they have to be accompanied by an adult anyway, which, you know, can be one of the stipulations, but it's probably going to be true anyway. It's unlikely that they'll be turning up by themselves. But secondly, in terms of, as I say, it will hopefully actually have a financial benefit, because, as I say, we are providing all of that information. You're hoping that these pupils will go home from school. They'll say to mum, to dad, to grandparents, anybody hopefully who will listen, oh, look, I've got this information about this local women's football team. I want to go and watch. Can we go? You know, their next match is here. Look, I've got a poster. I've got a flyer. I've got my mini season ticket. Get them excited. Get them engaged about it. And hopefully it leaves the parents, hopefully, with no excuse to say no, because, again, they get the free entry, and the parents, it's not going to get charged much. It's you know, probably, I think, the highest entry to our games has only ever been about £10, and it wouldn't be that usually. So it's a bit of a no-brainer. Financially, you would see more people actually coming through the gate, maybe more free in terms of the under-12s, but you're going to have the parents alongside them as well. So I think that's something that we absolutely want to do. As I say, because we would do it nationally and we would promote it, that would be the league's responsibility. I think it would also get a lot of attention coming out of lockdown if we are offering people the opportunity to go to games for free, especially under 12s, depending on obviously what the government guidelines are and things. But if we could, I think it would get a lot of attention as well, in terms of coverage in the media. So I think it's a no-brainer if we can do something like that. On top of obviously what we spoke about with BBC Alba and BBC Sport Scotland, I think those two would work really well hand in hand.
Yeah, I always remember I was kind of in primary school, I can't remember what age, maybe primary five, primary six, and I lived near Livingston, obviously in a West Lothian school, and I always remember like they did a primary school free ticket thing. Obviously at the time they were trying to attract more fans as well, and it just sticks with me, and it always has stuck with me that it was just kind of such a not an easy win, because it's not like you still have to then kind of organize it all, and the children still need to try and persuade their parents to take them along. But I just think it's such a good idea to try and encourage that that increased attendance.
Yeah, and it fits in with the overarching objectives that we spoke about, you know, getting more people watching and more people playing potentially as well, because, you know, hopefully you will get young girls and young boys as well going along and saying, do you know what, I want to play football as well. And they'll hopefully, whether it be the local team that they're watching, you know, whether it be a Livingston, a St Johnston, whoever women's team it might be, or they go and play somewhere, you know, it all fits in really, really nicely. And it will be a lot of work to do, especially in what is a shorter time frame. And obviously, government guidelines around coronavirus will change, and that will be a factor as well. But I think when things are back to normality and it's safe to do so, I think it's something we really should do. And I think the clubs hopefully would be supportive of it. You know, we would try and take as much of the work off them as possible to try and make it easy and make it simple for them. But it would be their job, I guess, in turn, to then try and make that match day experience as good as possible, which is also really important, because, you know, you don't want people turn up and go, well, I'm not going to come back again. So that's where the clubs have to do a bit of work. And that's hard, as you say. It's not an easy, straightforward win, but it's something that hopefully they want to do, is make a good match day experience for everybody, current fans and new fans alike.
Yeah, I was just going to touch on that as well. How closely do you work with the league and all the clubs?
In terms of working with the league and the clubs, we work, you know, obviously really, really closely. You know, personally, myself, one of the key areas, I guess, in terms of for the SWPL in particular, they'll probably, if you were to ask them, they'd probably say I nag them quite a bit and get them to probably send me loads of information. But they know it's for the good of the game. You know, for example, I'll go to them and say, look, right, these are the parts of the performance criteria that you need to meet in terms of media. Are you doing X, Y, and Z? And as much as, again, it's probably a pain for me to do that on a regular basis, it's vital for us to grow the game and to hit on these objectives that we've spoken about. So I think the other good thing about, you know, working closely with the clubs is that I'm always there in terms of if they need help and support. And that goes to all the clubs and teams that are involved in SWF. Obviously, with so many, it's not possible for me to give loads of time to each one, but I'll always be there to answer questions and support them. And I know that in the long run, it's beneficial because, you know, for example, one club came to me recently and was like, oh, we'd like to get headshots done. Is there a photographer you'd recommend? Now, even though technically, you know, I work for SWF and, you know, I don't, you know, it doesn't necessarily benefit us as an organisation for me to spend time giving them that information. It does indirectly, because I know, for example, those headshots that we can actually use on our website and use them to promote the game going forward as well. So again, it's not a direct benefit to the organisation, but it is an indirect one to support them. So yeah, I think, you know, those are the kind of ways for sure.
One thing I've found in my experience as well is that the female players are always seem to be more willing to play their part in promoting the game as well. How do you leverage that from an SWF point of view?
Well, it's something I'd love to see more of. And it's something that we did trial very briefly in the SWPL in particular, but it didn't really get off the ground, didn't get the support that we would have liked from the clubs. And again, that comes down to the resources that they have. And we understand that sometimes, you know, when you've got 101 things that you've got to prioritise, things like that can fall by the wayside. But what we wanted to do was just every week get the clubs to submit a video kind of message from a player, could be the same player each week, could be a different player, to promote their upcoming game, and do it more in a kind of, not a plea or an appeal, but to do it more in a personalised way where it's not just your simple kind of your graphic that you see all the time. You can still do that, but here is an actual player involved in the team, kind of as you're touching upon, playing their part to promote the game. And hopefully it builds that connection, that rapport between player, fan and other people involved in the game. And I think, as I say, one of the things I'd love to do is to actually do that on a more bigger scale, really. You know, do a weekly vlog style piece with every club in the SWPL. Again, could be one player, could be a group of players, could be even a coach if the players aren't so keen on doing it. I just think people would enjoy that kind of content. I think you've seen it with these Amazon documentaries, these Netflix documentaries. People like to see more behind the scenes, and I think you know, that's something we can offer quite easily in the women's game, as long as you can find the right people that want to do that. And I think it builds up these personalities, it builds up these stories that we want to push out and promote. Again, what I would say is it doesn't necessarily mean that we need YouTube superstars within each SWPL club or anything or anything like that. But I think just having something like that would be a really, really easy way to get across the personalities of the players, get across certain stories that are happening within the team, within the club. And I think that will engage people in a different way just to your standard, you know, audience with a match day graphic that you might attract. It will hopefully attract new people, new audiences, and actually build, as I say, another element to a club and a team. So I would certainly love to get to that point for sure. That's what we'd like to try and achieve. But again, it is just that resource for the clubs to do it. But I don't think it would take much to do it, really. I think it could be done, and I'd love to see it happen eventually.
Hopefully we'll see that in the not too distant future. Talking of future, let's fast forward a wee bit. It's the opening weekend in the SWPL. What do you plan on doing from, you talked about you're going to be out and about on match day. What do you plan on doing from a sort of league SWS perspective in covering match day?
Yeah, so in terms of my match day at the moment, I'm very much heavily involved, and I think that's partly why the SWPL clubs don't mind me too much, because they see me more or less every Sunday, or at least in the performance arm, they'll see me very regularly going to games, and that simply comes down to the resources we have as an organisation and as an association. So I'll go out. Usually I'll provide match highlights from one game every single Sunday. Depending on the locations of the games, I'll try and do photography from one other game. And that just gives us as an organisation, as a league, it gives us a good collection of photos from the games, or at least from one game. And then it also gives us high quality match highlights from another one as well. So that's what I try and do on a match day. And that obviously alongside tweeting out the results, putting out the league table graphic, the results graphic, all that stuff, which I'm usually trying to do on the go, which is difficult, but we make it work, and it's all part of the role. But again, I'm supported as well by, we've got some really great volunteers that go out and cover games through match reports, their live updates from games. You know, I'd love to try and get more people involved in that. You know, it's something that we've seen kind of grow since I've come in. It's maybe something that I'd like to spend more time developing and really getting into. But again, obviously, you've got to prioritise time here and there. And hopefully as well, we can build up our media team as well. We do have one videographer, for example, that will help, you know, support me go out and cover games. So obviously, I can't be in every place at one time as much as I'd love to be. So it would be great to have more people like them that I can call upon. So if there is, for example, two really good matches that are going on at the same time, we can actually try and provide in-depth highlights, photography, match report, whatever it might be, of all the matches that will have an impact. Obviously, we'd love to eventually get to a stage where every single match is covered in that way, which we are relying on the clubs in some way or form to do that at the moment. But obviously, the other thing that we touched upon is the fact that we'll have BBC Alba covering 12 games, which out of 21 is just obviously over the half. And then you'll have BBC Sport Scotland covering one game every single weekend as well. So, you know, all of a sudden, on a, you know, a full-on SWPL weekend, you know, we'll have a game on a Friday night on BBC Alba with obviously their coverage, which is phenomenal. BBC Sport Scotland doing, you know, very similar with their level of coverage on the Sunday. And then obviously from SWPL perspective, we could have two or three, four people, potentially even more, depending on how it grows, going out and covering games as well. So I think with the resources we've got and the, you know, both in terms of personnel, in terms of finances, I think we that's what we're aiming to achieve this season. And, you know, we should do better than we've ever done before because of those agreements that we spoke about. But hopefully in the future, I can get to a point where actually we can have someone who is more focused on actually looking at doing more on match days in terms of results graphics that are a bit more bespoke to each match, getting more live photos, maybe a bit more live updates, rather than me just kind of at half time quickly rushing out a quick tweet on what the result is from a game. I'd like to do more of that kind of in-depth stuff, but as they for the season coming up, I think that's what we'll be aiming to achieve, and I think that should be achievable.
I think that all sounds very exciting, and obviously, I mean, my keyword that I'm pulling out for this podcast at the moment is the momentum, and I think building on that, how are you looking to build on that with the channels that you are operating across, for not just the league, but obviously from your perspective of the from your perspective too. So yeah, what channels do you find the most valuable to kind of push the league's message and to push out those kind of match day updates as well?
I mean, in terms of the value we have, it is interesting because we use a very small number of social media channels in comparison to certain other brands and organisations. You know, we're predominantly Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and then obviously our own kind of methods in terms of the websites, etc. But it's interesting because I think what I found is that we have quite a unique split in a way that what we find on our channels is we can get a different value from each one. So Facebook, for example, we seem to find that it's predominantly more fans and more parents that are involved in the game. Where on Twitter, what we're tending to find that it's more players, it's more teams that are more engaged in that way. So it makes it very interesting. So depending on what communication we're trying to get out, you know, if it's an important message about, you know, right now, obviously staying safe, things like that, then what we're finding is that Twitter is really good for that because it is actually reaching the players, it's reaching the coaches, it's reaching the teams. Whereas what we would find is if we're trying to do more about match day promotion and, you know, trying to encourage people maybe to watch a game online, it would probably be Facebook that we would have more value in. So they have their value, but in very much in different ways. I think one of the things we want to try and do is expand the platforms that we use, because as I say, we do use, you know, predominantly Facebook and Twitter. The one right now that obviously stands out is Instagram. But I've always been very wary of or conscious of going into it, because I think with any, you know, channel that we use, to get the value in it, you need to be consistent. And I think the problem previously, perhaps for SWF, is that we wouldn't have been able to be consistent. It's obviously a visual platform, and without high quality visuals, if we were to just run in to that platform and try and make it work, I don't think we would get value out of it, and it probably would hinder us rather than actually help us. So what I'm hoping for this season is that what we're starting to see is we have more regular photography from games. You know, we've got on our media guidelines now about working with photographers more proactively and to promote them as much as to promote the game. And I think as well, some of the work that I've been doing during furlough to actually get our graphics up to a slightly higher level, maybe not as high as what Scott would do for us on a freelance level, but on a regular basis, we can actually get our graphics to a higher level on a regular basis. So that's going to be a platform that we'll certainly, I think, be expanding into. And I think, you know, based on, you know, what I would imagine, I think that will allow us to reach a slightly different demographic as well to what we currently have, or at least to reach one that's a bit more engaged on that platform. So as I say, the value we've got on our channels at the moment does vary, but I think we do get good value on each one depending on what messages we're trying to hit.
Just continuing on kind of channels there, obviously we've seen a lot of men's clubs putting more resources into their women's teams over the past couple of seasons. Do you think that they should have separate social media accounts or a single account? Obviously Man City, probably the big example there, but we've got Motherwell up here as well, haven't we?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and you know, is there a right or a wrong? I don't think there is. There's different ways of doing it, but I think if you are going to go down the single social media approach, I think you have to do it well, because I think as soon as you stop doing it or don't promote it maybe in the way that a separate channel could, people will notice it, they'll pick up on it, and then it can actually do more harm than good. And it's hard though. You know, again, I can understand, because we run 80 odd competitions, you know, you don't want to absolutely swamp people with information and, you know, bog them down in too much that's maybe not, you know, they're maybe not 100% relevant to them. You don't want to just, as I say, keep posting stuff all the time. You want to try and keep it relevant and keep it engaging. So it is really hard if you've got, you know, a men's team, a women's team, all different aspects of the club, you know, your foundation arms, you know, maybe events that are going on. You know, there's a lot to talk about. So I think for me personally, the way I would do it is I would probably go down a separate channel for the women's team, because I think it allows you to find that audience that are 100% engaged on what they want, which is your women's team. They want everything to do with the women's team, so you can give them that very specifically and go quite hard on it in a way. You know, you can give them training photos, training videos, you can give them updates and more regular on a day-to-day basis, rather than perhaps on a single social media platform where you might be a bit more conscious of all the things you've got going on and you might not do it as regularly. So I don't think there is a right or wrong way of doing it. My preference would be a two-channel approach, have something that's more specific to the women's team. But as I say, you can do both well and you know, and have success. I think, you know, the single channel could be brilliant if you do it right, because you know, you've got that mass audience there that should be interested in both the men's and the women's team. That's the ideal scenario. But I think you do have to do it right. And I think my preference would be you can still do it just as well with two channels. And you can still do it just as well.
I think following on from that, we've mentioned them a couple of times in the podcast already, but the Scottish women's national team obviously have been very successful over the in recent times, and pretty yep. much over the last few seasons now. How do you harness that success that they've had and kind of take it into the domestic game? And Michael, you can probably chime in here in terms of pushing the SWNT a bit further as well, if you want to.
Well, all I was going to say from my perspective was one of the things we've tried to be really cautious about is obviously we know that Scottish Women's National Team is a completely separate brand. And I think there was a time when, before I was involved, where I think what Scottish Women's Football on our channels, we were almost posting about everything to do with women's football in Scotland or about Scotland. So, for example, you know, we were talking on our channels about the national team and not just quote retweeting, you know, we were actually tweeting updates about games and things like that. And I think what that caused was a lot of confusion around our brand, and that people thought that we ran sometimes the national team. You know, we'd get inquiries here, there and everywhere about, you know, tickets and all the rest of it, and that wasn't good. So what we tried to do as a brand was very much try and make it very aware we run the domestic girls and women's game in Scotland. You know, that's to do with leagues, and really make sure that when we did promote the successes about the Scotland's women's national team and things that are going on within the Scottish FA, that, you know, we did very much post towards those channels rather than doing it by ourselves, which seems so basic. But again, you know, these are the things that we had to make sure we're getting done right when I first joined, I guess in a freelance, but then more in a full-time capacity as well. So I think harnessing the success of the Scotland's Women's National Team is something we need to do more of. We need to do it better, but I think we've been cautious of doing it because of that potential of having a clash, if you like, of people thinking that we actually are something to do with the national team. And we want to promote the success of it, as I say, but we want to make sure people are actually aware that if you want everything to do with the national team, these are the channels to go to, and this is where you find out more information. So we need to do more, because let's say we need to harness that success, as you say. What they've done is just, you know, remarkable. We do need to do more, but I think that's partly why we haven't, up to this point, maybe done as much as we could have.
Yeah, and I'd say from the Scottish FA point of view, is as Rob says there, we are the ones that have the SWNT brand, and a lot of what we our sort of mission is at the Scottish FA is to inspire a nation to love football, and there's been a real sort of concerted effort to an awareness that we need to increase the number of girls playing football, especially at a young age. And I think one of the things that happened in the early days of in and around the qualification for Euro 2017 was the creation of the soccer centres, where the players were given our name. A soccer centre was named after certain players. So you had like things like the Kim Little soccer centres up in the north region, for example, and there was like t-shirts with the girls' names on them and various things. And what we found was, research was telling us, is that the profile of the players was important, and that the research showed that the more people got to know the players, recognised the players, more interest came in the women's national team and the wider game off the back of that. And that was something that we were very conscious of. And I think you'll see that we try to promote as many players as possible, raise their profile. You see Erin, obviously, is the obvious standout, very talented player, but also does inspire a lot of younger girls, which is great. And for you know, you have the soccer centres at the sort of more of the younger age group, the 5 to 12, and then with support with the likes of UEFA, you start connecting that all the way up. So you've got We Play Strong centres in there now, for example, that bridge that gap at 12 years old. And I'm sure as Robert says, it's like the aim is that you want to get as many girls into competitive football, but just similar to the men's game, is it's not everybody wants to go and play competitive football, and it's trying to fill again gaps for women that want to play recreational football. So there's a lot of work that's going behind the scenes that you can take a lot of the great stuff and as Robert said, the remarkable achievements of SWNT, but how do you then drill that into having pathways for young girls and girls that go into teenage years? Because you find that I think the common dropout ages were sort of changes in school age, so 12 years old, 16 years old, for example, 18, is how do you then keep them in the game for as long as possible? And that's something where that falls a little bit more on the Scottish FA.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting, you know, what you're saying there, because it all hits on points that I think we as well, we try and achieve it as an organisation, and trying to, you know, that gap as you speak about, because it's you know, even more so now, players coming over and then making that jump into competitive football, but also, as you say, and you touched upon, trying to create more a recreational side of our game as well, which is something that has happened in the youth game over a number of years now, is now happening more in the senior level as well. So I think that's something that, you know, because of the restructure that just kind of went through just before coronavirus, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that helps player registration numbers, you know, what's going to happen in terms of hopefully more people playing the game, because they're actually playing at a level which is suitable for them. You know, there is teams that are, you know, equally matched on a regular basis, both at the youth level and at the senior level as well. So I think, you know, it's really interesting to see you've hit those points, and I think that the Scottish Women's National Team, you know, they do inspire both young players and adult players, hopefully, as well now. So hopefully we can, you know, both organisations can capitalise on that, both in terms of players playing and, you know, people watching as well.
Robert, conscious of time, but you've been doing a bit of upskilling in Photoshop, am I right to believe, during lockdown? How have you found that, and what have been the sort of things you've been using to teach yourself?
Yeah, it's been really good. I mean, it came about really because I was using some free software to do a lot of our graphics, and it worked, you know, reasonably well, but our freelance designer Scott, obviously, he was using Photoshop, and I kind of thought to myself, every time there was a small change that we needed to make, you know, I was having to go back to him and say, you know, can you fix this, can you tweak this, and it's probably not the best use of his time. He's obviously happy to do it, but I never thought it was the best use of his time. And I thought, well, if I've got the ability to make these kind of small changes very quickly, it benefits everyone in that sense. But also, it hopefully benefits us, because we can't obviously go to Scott for absolutely everything. You know, he's on a freelance basis, and, you know, certain hours that he does, I can't go to him for every single graphic, every single piece of work that I'd like to get done. So, you know, for weekly results, weekly fixtures, league tables, you know, thumbnails on YouTube videos, for all the things that we can do really great high level graphics for, I thought, well, this is the time to do it while on furlough. So just absolutely got right into it, found myself in a beginner's course first, then did the advanced course, and I'm certainly miles away from any level of professional editor or graphic designer, but at least now I can certainly do the basics to a certain degree and hopefully do them to a better level than I was previously, which now looking back wasn't maybe good as I thought at the time. But as I say, it means that hopefully what we can put out as a brand on SWF and on the SWPL, it's higher quality. Hopefully that will in turn, you know, hit on those objectives, because it is the small things that can make big differences, and just improving that level of quality in our graphics and our visuals will hopefully make us stand out more. It will make our brand more recognisable, and hopefully in turn, as I say, hit on those objectives. So it's been a good use of time, I think, during lockdown, and yeah, just kind of excited now to get the season underway in a way to start using those skills, hopefully.
I've got to say, Robert, I think you actually inspired me to pick it up as well. I've been doing exactly the same maybe over the last month or so now. And I think it was probably because I spotted you doing exactly the same and just picking it up, giving it a try and seeing what you could do on it. So, yeah, thank you for that as well, because you got me into it too.
No, well, it's. I think it's nice to know I've inspired someone in Photoshop. I don't think I would have said that so early on in my Photoshop journey. But no, as I say, it's been a lot of fun. I think you know that's what I found. I've actually enjoyed doing it, and I think there can be a wee bit of intimidation with these kind of digital platforms sometimes. So it was nice to get the skills. Now I'm not so afraid of to use it. And hopefully you've been the same, because I think once you do get to know the basics of it, there's a lot of stuff you can do, and it is just a case of finding, I guess, the right way of learning about it and then throwing yourself into it. And I guess furlough's been one of the best times to do it for a lot of people, and yeah, I've certainly benefited from it.
Yeah, I definitely don't class myself as anywhere near any of the things that you maybe see from other accounts yet, but I'm really enjoying jumping in and seeing what I can do on it.
Yeah, no, that's it. It's just about practice makes perfect at the end of the day.
Definitely. Robert, finish us up with kind of what other leagues or maybe some clubs that you want to pick out that you get some inspiration from then.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, I think in the women's game, in terms of clubs, I think what Glasgow City have done for years now is you know, inspirational, and you know, specifically on their media and their marketing. You know, I know Callum at Glasgow City, you know, personally, and you know, the work that he's done there throughout the number of years has been phenomenal. Obviously, he focuses mainly on the video side, but you know, at a time when, you know, probably a lot of men's clubs were miles behind what Glasgow City were doing, you know, at the top level of the men's game, they really have set a bar for women's football, I guess, across the globe to a certain extent, and also in men's football in Scotland as well. So I think, you know, fantastic work that they do as well. And there's too many now in Scotland to pick up in particular. But you know, I think in terms of leagues, I try and keep an eye on all of them. There is ones and little bits here and there that I always take ideas and inspiration from. Probably one that's most close to ourselves is obviously the Women's Super League. Probably watch that the closest out of all the leagues and brands and things that are out there, just because obviously being a league is quite a unique place and position to be. Sometimes you look a bit envious at the Women's Super League, given what's been going on and obviously the resources they have to do what they do. But at the same time, I think I always try and remind myself it isn't apples and apples. You know, what SWPL and what our clubs produce and everybody involved in the game, what we actually manage to produce, given the resources, both in terms of financially and in terms of personnel, is probably above and beyond to a certain extent. And that's thanks to clubs like Glasgow City and all the ones that are involved at the top level of the game. I think one good example I'd give as well is Hamilton Academical. I think the work that they do is fantastic as well. The regular communication they've done, especially during lockdown, has been really, really impressive. And one thing I would say as well is, you know, they got relegated a couple of seasons ago now. And I think it'd be very easy in a position like that to just kind of go, well, let's not give people information, you know, we're in the league below, but they actually kept the standards where they were. And I think that's something that was actually really impressive to see, because it's very easy to let it slip, you know, let the resources go down, but actually they kept the media and the marketing to the high level. So I think I would give them a lot of credit as well. But it's all the clubs involved in the game that really helped get us to where we are.
Perfect. And I think that's a great place to end it as well. Thank you very much for coming on. Hopefully everybody listening has enjoyed that. I think Michael and I are going to finish with a couple of examples. Michael, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I'll kick off. So I think we've seen it that all Premiership clubs have introduced their live streaming, and there's some great examples of production levels out there. Interesting now that a couple of clubs in the Lowland League, for example, have announced their streaming, Kelty being one. I think BSC Glasgow will come as no surprise that they're going down the Twitch line with Mozza, which will be very interesting to follow as well. And for anybody that is listening that's maybe not as familiar with Twitch and haven't listened to it yet, we had Farhan from Twitch on talking about the potential of using the platform for football and specifically clubs. So I definitely go and check that out. And the other one I just wanted to flag was it was a team down Southampton and Richmond. And we've seen it up and down the board where their clubs have been doing auctions and raffles and various things for fundraising. So, but what they've done is for £10 that you can get their stadium named after you for a season, which is, you know, a simple idea, but it's garnered so much attention. I know various accounts like Mandy Al and loads of others have picked up on it. So hopefully that they're generating quite a bit of interest and obviously revenue off the back of that. And look, there's no reason why if clubs up here are looking at that going, you know, God, that's not a bad idea. I don't think we'd get away with naming a stadium after somebody for a season. You know, is it possible to name a stand? So there's different ways of doing it. But yeah, look, I thought it was an interesting thing that you don't see too often.
No, definitely. I'm thinking maybe you could name like the Pie Hut after somebody as well. I would love a Pie Hut named after me. I have a couple of examples as well, just to finish us off. My first one is actually from women's football down south. Robert, you'll probably be well aware of this team, Durham Women FC. They do quite a lot online. I'm sure I've seen them in the past do the kind of match day calculator posts where they kind of summarise how much it is actually going to be for a match day there, which I always thought was brilliant too. But I noticed recently, I think it was about maybe a week ago or so, that they have done a cracking bit of kind of sponsorship content. I think they must be sponsored by like a mini dealership this season. So their team graphic for the season is just 11 minis. And the car registration plates are the players' names, and obviously the numbers are on the side of the minis as well, which I just thought was something brilliantly different. And yeah, I really like that. And then, I mean, I wasn't going to, but I think I'm going to plug myself because did a piece with Nathan from Queen's Park. Queen's Park's signing announcements have kind of been catching the eye. Obviously, their actual signings have been catching the eye too, but the way they've been announcing them has been brilliant. Kind of across, obviously, during lockdown, and then as we're kind of come out of lockdown too, they've gradually got better and increased the things that they're doing with the players that they're signing. So, yeah, I did a piece kind of focusing in on that, and I just wanted to plug it again because I think shining a light on some of the things that the clubs that maybe lower down the pyramid are doing is always something we try and do on the podcast. Yeah, and I think that's us. Robert, thank you very much again for coming on.
No, thank you very much for having me. It's been great to talk about women's football for about an hour or so. It's yeah, really appreciate it.
Definitely, and good luck for the new season. I'm sure it'll all go brilliantly.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it'll be excellent on the pitch. So here's hoping that myself and everyone involved can do it justice off the pitch as well.